This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, your community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
We came together today to talk about how communities gather in times of need. When we scheduled this episode, we couldn't have anticipated the severe weather events that would affect so many of us across the country, tragically resulting in the loss of six lives at Moau. Our thoughts are with the families and whānau of those whose lives were taken. We want to acknowledge and thank the rescue teams, first responders and community whose courage, care and commitment in such heartbreaking circumstances will not be forgotten. We will continue to support one another, driven by our shared humanity, to be compassionate and caring. Thank you for listening today. Welcome to Volunteering Vibes, Volunteering Hawke's Bay's podcast. Our country has had its fair share of events, and they've got us thinking about how vulnerable we might be. How ready are we to handle what happens to us and our neighbours? How will we take care of ourselves and one another when something does happen? There are many people in our communities who are already planning, acting and preparing for these kinds of circumstances. And today we're joined by Harris Dowson, Community Resilience Advisor at Napier City Council. Hi, Harris. Welcome.
Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So for those of us that don't know about the work of you and your team, can you just tell us what happens?
Sure. Yeah, so I work for the Community Resilience Team at the Napier City Council, which used to be the Community Engagement Team. But obviously with the history and the Hawke's Bay, the focus, understandably, and not just the Hawke's Bay, has shifted towards resilience. So we're part of the wider community strategies team, but our team hold five portfolios, which encompass positive ageing, youth, disability, multicultural, and the safer Napier portfolio, which encompasses all of our emergency services and within that civil defence. So my role is varied. I'm kind of the jack of all trades. Initially, I came in to cover some maternity leave and support within that space, but have been extended to help with the rollout of building resilience within the community. So community emergency hubs, which is a thing that I've done since their inception after the cyclone, when I worked with Hatahone St. John in a community-based role as well. So my goal basically is to support communities to be able to develop, stand up and have their own community emergency hub, which is a model that helps people define their skill set within their own communities, where they can gather in an emergency, they can support each other with both resources and information and anything else you might need during that time when our emergency services are stretched.
Wow. And so how's that work going? How's that growing?
It's going really well. So, I mean, it's a regional model. Initially, the model was developed in the Wellington and Wairarapa region. And after the cyclone, obviously, Te Mata o Māori was going, oh, wow, we need to be more prepared. And seeing the way communities connected in with one another during that time, we kind of realised that, oh, we need to stop getting in communities' ways. They're always going to want to help, so why don't we uplift them? And we looked around different places. I say we, it wasn't me, but the wider we, and landed on this model down in Wellington. And it's basically from post-cyclone been rolling out across all the councils in terms of different stages. So the rural areas, so Central Hawke's Bay and the rural areas of Hastings, are pretty much all well set because they were the more impacted people initially. Wairoa is going through their own process too. And then for us and for Napier, it's been a bit of a slower process. However, it's coming along well now. The urban centres are obviously a bit more challenging. You know, they don't all have the town hall. They don't all have the, know your neighbour sort of mentality that rural communities do.
Yes.
But it's been really positive. So the goal long term is that there'll be about 20 community emergency hubs across Napier. Everyone should be around a half an hour walk to one, which is not a great metric because half an hour for who? but it works out to be about 2.5 Ks. And the reason that we want that many is so that on any given emergency, obviously we think of weather events or earthquakes here in the Hawke's Bay, but there's plenty of other potential emergencies that you might want to stand one up, that if one can't stand up, another one can, and those communities can flow into it. But currently we've got four that are active, that are ready to stand up, and we have, I reckon probably 10 more that are going through that process. And then the rest, we have identified venues and people who are keen. We're just starting that journey now. Mm-hmm. With the goal being halfway through this year, they'll all be at a point that they feel comfortable that if anything was to happen, they could stand up.
Right, they reckon they could help out in those circumstances. So when I first became aware of this work, obviously instantly you thought about emergency situations that occur, but you shed some light on the fact that those hubs can stand up in other circumstances. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. The cool thing about community emergency hubs and the model is that they are community-led 100%. So the community, the way it usually works is that there are roles within the hub model. So you'll have your hub, you know, leader, you'll have your comms person, a person who, you know, coordinates needs and offers. So someone might come in and go, hey, I've got 3 extra beds. Mm. Someone might come in going, I've got nowhere to sleep, and they join those 2 dots together. There's about 8 roles, but I think in terms of the community-led aspect is that communities can decide when they want to stand up. There will be times, obviously, with those big weather events that it will be obvious, and there'll be other times where it won't be. There was an example given, I can't remember where it was specifically, because this model is in the Hawke's Bay, but it's quickly becoming a national model because of its effectiveness.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Trying to get consistent in terms of our response. But it was, a high school bus driving from one town to another for a rugby game. It broke down in the middle of nowhere near a small rural town. Mm-hmm. I think they had, 40 people on the bus. It was like 6 o'clock on a Friday evening. It was raining. So the community went, oh, well, we'll stand up the hub because then we've got a space for them. You know, we know within our hub we can offer them tea and coffee and shelter. We can start, we can support them with the logistics of how are they going to get this fixed, how are they going to get out of here, all that sort of stuff as well. So that was like the kind of a really good, and for them, a really good practice of how to stand it up, but in kind of quite a low-stakes situation. But just knowing that it's kind of there and it's an asset to the community, no, this is where we go when anything happens, whether it be large or small, that needs a bit of community collaboration. I really like it because I think that so much time and energy was spent after Cyclone Gabrielle within communities trying to establish that, build the boat while they were sailing sort of thing. So it's trying to get into a position that it's like, cool, your community knows this is where they go, this is where their hub is, and then from there, that's where the extra information will come from.
Mm. And for me as an incomer, as you can hear, it really fits with how Kiwis are.
Yeah. I think it's just, it's funny. I think I always just like the person who came up from Wellington and did the training for it initially, her whole thing was just like, people are going to help regardless. Mm. So like if we can just put some structure around it, then it will be more effective for everyone involved. And it will, obviously release a lot of that strain on those services that that are struggling in terms of those moments as well. Like I always think about, the blokes that got in their little outboard and went up Esk Valley River to get people off the roofs up there. It's like, it's not going to be search and rescue that come. It'll be your neighbour down the road, So it's
absolutely
how do we better link people in together and amplify their kind of resilience. And it is a really good model.
So the people that take part in these hubs are volunteers.
Yeah. It's totally community-led. It's the kind of analogy that I try to think of it like is like teaching a kid to ride a bike. Like council and emergency services are there at the beginning. Usually we'll come in, we'll find a venue, we'll advertise and do a bit of a presentation about the details of the hubs. So we're kind of holding on to the bike as we're pushing it along, and then we kind of we'll do a practice with them. So we'll set up a scenario. Half the people who have come along can volunteer as the actual roles, and then the other half play people coming in. We give them little kind of scenarios. It might be like, oh, I've lost my mum or whatever. It's a kid. What are you going to do in all those sort of situations? And then usually we try to kind of back off a bit and let them, kind of take control themselves. We've got a fund for each hub in terms of giving them resources and support, and there's some core stuff, but then there's a part of the fund that is decided by them because some communities might need certain things when others go, oh, no, we don't need a generator. Bob's got one down the road, so that's fine. But, yeah, ultimately it is community-led and totally led by volunteers. But it's a really low-impact volunteering in terms of really your biggest volunteering time, obviously, is in an emergency response when you need to stand it up. But a presentation initially is about an hour, probably after work or on a Saturday morning. A training is about an hour and a half on a Saturday morning. You might do that a couple of times, a few emails here and there. But really, it's we're trying to make it as low impact on people's busy lives as we can, just so that they know that it's there, they know what they're doing in that time, and it's, a stitch in time saves nine sort of thing.
Yeah, and that tunes into what volunteers tell us about what they appreciate in terms of knowing what the commitment is, what they'll be asked to do, where they'll be asked to do it, how long they might be asked to do it for, so... Yeah, that makes people more inclined to step up, I think.
Yeah, and also as well, it's just understanding, how busy the world is now in terms of that sort of stuff too. And I think that it is hard, I think, to put yourself into those spaces, especially with everything we've been through and what the country's going through now, because it can be triggering or, challenging in those sort of ways as well. But we've got a really strong team of, people within the council and support from different emergency services around that whole process, so that you never feel alone, but you are in control of your own community. I remember there was an emergency management specialist within St. John that kind of said, pre and post-cyclone, that the history was that we got into a point that emergency services and response was getting somewhat arrogant about being like, we know best.
Okay.
And the reality is that we've learned a lot is that actually communities are always going to know the best about their own needs and what they need to do to be prepared.
Yeah.
So it's, that kind of...
And everything I've read post-cyclone has kind of said that, hasn't
exactly.
it? It said you've got communities there, people are involved, want to be involved, have the local knowledge.
Yeah, and skill set too. Like, it's amazing when you start getting people in these spaces. Like, West Shore is one that's our most recent one that's, like, fully equipped and ready to go. And they've been amazing to deal with because you get these people and they've got a really strong residents association, which makes it a lot easier trying to pull people in terms of those sort of things as well. But once you kind of start the journey, more people will be interested. It's a snowball rolling down a hill. But for them, it's amazing. You sit in a room and you go, okay, we've got a maintenance role here, and it's like, oh, well, I'm a builder, oh, I'm an electrician, I'm a plumber. It's like, okay, cool, we have a maintenance team now.
That's that, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, and this person, it's like, oh, yeah, actually, I'm from Canada, and I've taught emergency response courses for my whole life and all that. So it's like, okay, amazing. So, once you actually start peeling back the layers of your own community, you have a whole professional team there.
Enabling, not disabling.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And it's, I think it's just that shift of mindset, which is one of the, silver linings of the cyclone and other weather events, is that people are actually going, okay, how do we mobilise and support these people so that when it does come time to stand up, they're ready, they can act, and also help us at the council, because every community emergency hub has a radio that plugs into our emergency operations centre within the council too.
Okay.
So we can give information directly to them. They can become a point of, trusted knowledge for their community, but also if they're encountering any major things that we need to know about, they can feed that back to us as well.
Okay. Wow. So I wonder what volunteers tell you about, being part of this program. What do they tell you about what it's like on the inside?
That's a really good question. I think that I've heard different feedback from different communities, obviously. I think it's funny, like, having been doing this since the cyclone in different ways, when I was in St. John and was working in rural communities, you'd go and you'd, have a hui and a town hall with farming, communities and all of these different people, and you'd go, okay, in an emergency, you're all going to come here and work together, and they'd look at you like you're an idiot. They'd be like, yeah, obviously. This is our core place. Like, yep, we know that, and we know how to work together, we know how to do this sort of stuff. But then you kind of talk them through the model and you kind of run them through it. And people, I think, the main thing I've seen from volunteers is that they appreciate basically putting structure around what they want to do anyway. And being able to target it in terms of going, I know that I would be really good at, the community space role in a hub, which is, your cups of tea, are you okay? Maybe some first aid, all that sort of stuff. And other people would be like, I know for sure that I'm the guy that it's going to be on a radio, doing that sort of stuff, managing that information. So having that kind of clear line of purpose around how to help in an emergency, I think is a big thing that volunteers get out of it. There's also another big thing is that people enjoy being able to actually meet other members of their community and connect on a level of what is at first something quite serious, but then also you build relationships and connections within that way as well. I think that a lot of people struggle with the individualism of modern day life. So I think it's kind of a very necessary and beneficial shift back to that kind of collective mindset thinking and opportunity to connect, grow, bounce ideas off one another. So yeah, there's lots of different things.
So do volunteers need a particular skill set, do you think?
No.
Or no, not at all?
No, not at all. There will be something that you will be able to do there. Mm. Each role is one of the kind of, the way I look at each role is the easy to pick up, difficult to master sort of thing. So each of them are set that everyone, you have a lanyard that has your role on it that says the core things that you've got to do, as well as there's like posters that will show you the roles as well, because the idea being you might have, you know, two or three people who are the core people to do any one given role. However, there's nothing to say that those people will be able to get to the hub in any given situation. So anyone should be able to pick them up. Having those skills is great, and I bet that anyone that walks in the door will have some skills for one of those individual roles. You'll probably know which role you'd want to do. But even if you're not playing an active part in those roles, there's a huge amount of mahi to be done for, like, runners running between things, writing on whiteboards, for, you know, moving stock in and out in terms of people donating things, all that sort of stuff. Or even just, like, the vast majority of a community as well will be coming just for information. We're inherently curious and we want to know what's going on, and then how can we help? So no. And also as well, through the whole process, there's, you know, we train people as well to be able to feel confident in any given role or responsibility. So no, you can come in with any skill set and there will be something that you can do.
That's awesome. So if you've just joined us, you're listening to a regular program presented by Volunteering Hawke's Bay, in which we promote volunteering and volunteering organisations across our region. Our website is vhb.org.nz. I'm Tracy, and today we're talking with Harris Dowson, Community Resilience Advisor, about emergency preparedness and how you can get on board. So you've told us about how you first became in this, so moving over from St John's into this role with Napier City Council. What have you found most enlightening about this process as you're moving through it? What's been like your light bulb or your surprising moment?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think that the thing that I've liked about this process is that I genuinely believe in the model, which makes it easier to sell to communities. Because I've seen it in action without the structure behind it in terms of post-cyclone. A lot of my role when I was in Hātori St. John was community engagement, preventative health, all of that sort of stuff. And then obviously it shifted largely to prevention, but and then the recovery phase sort of aspect as well. But right after the cyclone, for a job that's so dependent on communication, and we had none, it was kind of like I didn't really know what to do. So it was a lot of initially, you know, end of a shovel sort of stuff, and then ended up being able to utilize one of the vans that we had to do a lot of just moving resources around, donations, foods, all that sort of stuff. And going to communities like Omahu Marae was amazing. And there were many places like it as well where they were functioning in the model of a hub, but they just didn't have the, you know, the paperwork behind it basically as well. So I think that for me it was kind of, I guess, the most enlightening thing about it. And you always see it, and it's a shame that you kind of, I feel like it's highlighted in emergencies and then it kind of rolls away. That sense of like, yeah, we are collaborative, collective people. Like, this is what we are supposed to be doing, supporting one another. The impetus is just natural. Like, no one questions when they're getting, you know, like, during that whole time, like, there was no question around, oh, am I going to get paid back for that, or expectation or anything. It was just like, how can I help and how can I go through those processes? So I think being able to be a small part of that is something that I feel very grateful for. And also, I just like working within communities in a small way. It's just you meet amazing people that are eager to engage, and want to know that there is something out there. Because I think that that's the other big challenge, is that we're still kind of stuck in a bit of an old head mindset around civil defence centres and all that sort of stuff, which we still have, but they serve a very different purpose. They're, you know, shelter in place and food and recovery for people who have lost a lot, things that community hubs can't do. But, you know, the vast majority of people just need information and want to know how to help, and that's what this model does really well.
It does. And I'd like to add capable to your three C's. So you had collaborative, collective, and capable.
100%. Yeah, I think that that's the big thing, is that everyone has something to offer. And everyone has something to learn. So I think going into communities and bouncing stuff, that's a thing we've developed as well. In Napier Council, is that we now have hub champion meetings. So so it's about once a quarter, again, trying not to be like, you know, overly draining of people's times. We get a couple of people from each hub to come together. We'll do some training, talk about what's going on, get their feedback, have ideas bounced off. So that it's that kind of living model of going, how can we make things better here? How can we not be so overly prescriptive? Ultimately, you guys are the leads here, so how do we make sure that we aren't ever crossing that boundary? You guys still have full autonomy, and we're here to support you as well.
Unfortunately, life in Aotearoa gives us lots of opportunities to test out these skills. Is there or will there be some sort of process of reviewing situations that occur and how they're handled, so that we're learning from those, whether that's just in our region or across regions?
100%. I think that they're kind of so another thing that runs in tandem with the Community Emergency Hub is the Community Resilience Plan. So some communities will do them and they might not have a hub, but pretty much every community, and I know in Napier definitely, and I imagine across the Hawke's Bay, will all have a Community Resilience Plan and a hub kind of running together. So the Community Resilience Plan is where communities sit down and basically go through their own area, identify what their risks are, going, oh, we know that there's a creek down there that always floods, or that bridge is not, you know, that's an old bridge and it might go, but also as well what resources they have. Oh, we know there's always going to be food down, you know, such and such a place or whatever it might be. So there's the kind of preventative acknowledgement of potential risk. And then, yeah, within the development of the hub and the trainings that come with it, there can be further detail. And people are eager to support it, from emergency services to NEMA to councils. So usually if communities say, this is something we're concerned about and we'd like to be more skilled, that's great. We'll be like, 100%, let's figure out how to do that. Yeah, because, you know, it's that classic thing. If one person's got that question, probably 10 people also have, and they haven't asked that question. So it's just, again, it's that evolving training process as well.
So looking forward then, what's coming up for you and the team?
So lots of hub meetings. so we're trying to kind of target specific areas. We've got lots. So all of the venues are pretty much locked in now. So we've got Marae Nui EIT in Napier is going to be one, the central space there. So we've got setting dates for an upcoming community meeting for that. Same with the Napier City Rovers will be one as well. I got a phone call from Napier Bowls this morning in Marua saying they'd be keen, which is awesome. We'd kind of been going back and forth, but just been playing phone tag over Christmas. So it's like getting that call. It's like, yes, great, awesome, because they'll be fantastic. So, but that's pretty much happening all across Napier.
Okay.
So if anyone is, you know, keen to get involved, to learn more about it, you can go if you search Community Emergency Hub on Google or Community Emergency Hub Hawke's Bay, you'll get all the information about the hubs.
Okay.
But also as well, if you go onto the council website, you'll be able to find my contact details, and you can get in touch directly with me or within our community team, and I'll give you a bell and tell you where your hub is, and you can get involved. We'd love you. Please come and get involved. It's awesome.
Well, you've heard the call, so I'd just like to wrap up by saying a huge thank you to Harris and to his colleagues for being part of the incredible network of compassionate communities all over our region. Thank you so much for all you do.
No worries whatsoever. Thank you for having me and being able to amplify the hubs.
That's awesome. So our cities and our city councils are just one of the 270 plus organisations that Volunteering Hawke's Bay have as members. And if you'd like to get involved, whether that's just you, your workmates or your club, your community does need you. So hop on over to www.vhb.org.nz and get into it. I can't leave today without saying a huge thank you to our mates here at Radio Hawke's Bay. We literally couldn't do it without you. You can catch this episode and loads of other great opportunities to listen, learn and get involved at radiohawkesbay.org.nz. Bye for now.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.